chapter 3, chapter 1, reading the questions by the Dura on text 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Pureshu punyo pavana drikum jese.
Pureshu punyo pavana drikum jese.
Apankato yeshu saritsarashu.
Apankato yeshu saritsarashu.
Anantalinga samalankiteshu.
Anantalinga
Chara Tirtha Yatanaesha Anyaha. Puration. Holy places like Ayodhya, Dwarka, and Mathura.
Holy places like Ayodhya, Dwarka, and Mathura.
Punya.
Piety.
Upavana.
Upavana.
The air.
The farts.
Huh?
The farts.
It says the air here.
The air farts.
Audrey.
Hill.
Kunjeshu. In the orchards, Apanka, without sin, Toyeshu, in the water, Sirit, river, Sarashu, lakes, Anantalingai, the forms of the unlimited, Samalankriteshu, being so decorated, Chachara. Executed. Tirtha. Places of pilgrimage. Ayatanesu.
Ayatanesu.
Holy land.
Holy land.
Ananyaha.
Ananyaha.
Alone or seeing Krishna alone. Maybe we should let them do that.
What?
Translation and purport. He began to travel alone, thinking only of Krishna, through various holy places like Ayodhya, Dwarka, and Mathura. He traveled where the air, hill, orchard, river, and lake are all pure and sinless, and where the forms of the unlimited decorate the temples. Thus he performed the pilgrim's progress. Purport. These archa forms of the Lord may be considered idols by the atheists, but that does not matter for persons like Vidura or his many other servants. The forms of the Lord are mentioned here as Anantalinga. Such forms of the Lord have unlimited potency, the same as that of the Lord himself. There is no difference between the potencies of the archa and those of the personal forms of the Lord. For example, the post box and post office may be applied here. The little post boxes distributed all over the city have the same potency as the postal system in general. The duty of the post office is to carry letters from one place to another. If one puts letters in post boxes authorized by the general post office, the function of carrying letters is performed without a doubt. Similarly, the Archamurti can also deliver the same unlimited potency of the Lord as when he is personally present. Vidura, therefore, could see nothing but Krishna in the different archa forms. And ultimately, he was able to realize Krishna alone and nothing else. Namah Vishnu Padam Krishna Stavakarajan Matavakarajan Swami Kinami. On stage, Sarasota Devi Guru Nachara Shri Shishana Vishnu Chit. So we're reading about the great saint Vidura. He's like ethics personified. I have one little book, it's called The Axioms of Vidura. And they're all real healthy sayings that Vidura has said, and they all have to do with what to do spiritually and materially, what's to do right and what's to do wrong. He gives such great advice for everyone on how to control yourself and control the kingdom, control the world, if you'd like. So we have great respect for this great sage, but unfortunately we are seeing here that some people didn't have that respect. And this was due to their impiety, not following his instructions, because he was like a guru, actually. He was gave both material and spiritual advice to, or tried to Dhritarashtra. So in that way, he's considered a guru of sorts. But his life was full of a big challenge. It was a struggle to go and be there in the palace as a lesser of the so-called leaders there, and not respected fully, and definitely not listened to by the king. So to have to do your duty like that and try to do it with, you know, your passion, but knowing that it's like going out the window, or it's like talking to a blank wall, it could be very depressing, especially if it goes on for years and years and years. But here now it's coming to a point where it sounds like Vidura had his bow on his shoulders, like, uh-oh, I think I better carry this around just in case, you know. Things are getting pretty, a little bit tense here, and they're starting to throw out some very ill names and accusations against, taking more or less the instructions like we hear in the nectar devotion, that if one gets blasphemed, you can do three things. The first thing you should do is try to defeat that person. There's no chance here. There's no sense arguing with King Dhritarashtra. That's already tried to happen. It didn't work. And then there's, if you can't defeat them, then it says, one place it says you can cut out the tongue, but in another place it says that you should give up your life. Not practical. And to give up Vidura's life for Dhritarashtra, no way. That's not a chance. And so the third thing is that you just leave. You leave the place. And so this is the direction that Krishna has arranged and kind of set up for Vidura to leave his so-called shelter. It really wasn't a shelter being in that palace. He really wasn't protected. No one stood up for him, really. And maybe Bhishma sometimes, I don't know. But there was no love, that's for sure. And there was no respect whatsoever. So it was really not a shelter, but to speak of. And so, best that he just leave. Also, it says in the scriptures that you should accept what's favorable for your service and reject what's unfavorable. So here he's rejecting this duty that he had, and but on good grounds. And so pilgrimage is the answer. And we know what a relief it is to go on pilgrimage every once in a while. I was in Los Angeles, I think it was 1972, and Prabhupada was coming there often, staying for quite a bit of time. And I remember one lecture he gave, and he said, this was 72, so only really one big group of devotees had gone to India at that time, in 1970, maybe some others in the next year. But at that time, he sat on the Vyasa and he says that I want all my disciples to go to India regularly, to go on pilgrimage regularly. And I was thinking, how are we going to do that? All I own is a milk crate. Literally, all I own is what fits in a milk crate. And I'm going, how are we going to do that, you know? Because at that time, it was like $700 to India or something. I said, that would be really nice, you know? But I had no idea what India was like, you know? But anyway, that was Prabhupada's instructions. He says, I want them to go there, become enlivened, and come back and preach. That's what his exact words were. And I was thinking, that sounds like a good program. I hope it happens. And we know that it's also said that you can't buy a ticket to India, you know, but somehow other Krishna arranges it. So here, Krishna's arranged for him to go on pilgrimage. And so pilgrimage is a nice chance to get a little different change of duty, leave some of your normal service behind, and spend some more time pulling yourself out of high gear, especially here in the West, where in the fast lane all the time, and to slow down and do some extra absorption into Krishna consciousness, especially hearing your Gayatri, hearing your chanting. You can read more attentively. You don't have so much on your mind, and you can, of course, do some writing. Most of the time, and I know that, I never have time to write anything. I always take a pad, a nice big thick notebook whenever I go to India or whenever I go anywhere on pilgrimage, and find myself writing a lot, which is Prabhupada encouraged us also to do that, to write our realizations. It's very, very purifying, and it makes you go deeper and deeper, and different thoughts swell in your head of how you can increase your service and increase your Krishna consciousness. So it's a time to upgrade your japa, upgrade your reading, fine-tune it. And of course, as Biduri demonstrates here, is you search out for those advanced devotees, devotees that you can share and exchange these little gems, these little treasures we have of our realizations that we get. And you can gain so much from those exchanges. And as Prabhupada said, become inspired to go back and preach more and more. And so we see here that there was a great exchange of these gems between Vidura and Maitreya and Uddhava, and I'm sure many other great saints that he met while he was on pilgrimage for quite a long time. But it's not easy to go on pilgrimage. There's always some austerity. I know I went in 1975 the first time to India, and not much facility. The women were given a place to sleep right on top where they cooked. And so it was already March, and they cooked all day long, and the cement was, you could touch it and practically burn yourself. We had to sleep there, and so that wasn't too much fun. And so then we'd go up to the roof and sleep on the roof, and then a dust storm came by, swept everything away. We found our sleeping bags down the road near the yoga place. And so you know, no clean water. We had that crazy circle of with the men's bathrooms on the outside and the women on the inside, and no running water. Everyone was sick as dogs, and, you know, austerities. But think of Vidura, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years before going to India. Must have been really austere to travel. And most of these pilgrimage places, there's some very pronounced ones. One's in south, one's in east, one's in north, and one's in west. That's a lot of little puttas, little things, you know, walking that you have to do to get to these places. So, and under all seasons and circumstances. So, it was not easy. But it was more comfortable than living with your enemies. Not comfortable living in that palace with all that intrigue going on. So he relished this pilgrimage and made the best use of it, of course. And he comes back very refreshed. And he's also so potent that now he sees, I'm going to give it one final try for Dhritarashtra. And so he preaches his hardest, his best. And as we've discussed in one other class, that, you know, Dhritarashtra was pretty fried, beaten up, slapped in the face. And so he listens, and Vidura is finally successful in moving him onwards in his journey to Krishna consciousness. So this was a type of a guru relationship, but when you look at it, we can learn a lot from it. It was not an ideal relationship, that you go to your guru. Prabhupada called it, it's like you keep a pet. You know, oh, I have a guru, I have an advisor, I have this. But if you go to him and say, oh, what can I do for you, Guruji? And you're thinking that he better say the right thing. He better say what I want to hear. Otherwise, I'm not gonna do it anyway. This type of attitude goes on. Instead of being submissive and say, you know, how can I surrender and accept, be ready to accept that instruction. Dhritarashtra wasn't even ready to hear the instruction. He definitely didn't want to hear anything that he didn't want to do. So this is a very offensive attitude. And it is a complaint from some gurus, even in our movement now, that people, you know, disciples come and they say, oh, how can I serve you? But if it's not what they want to hear, they're just going to do what they want to do anyway. So this is something that we can't let contaminate our attitudes that we should have for our spiritual master. Because the Diksha-Guru relationship, it has to be so strong that we get so attached to our guru that ultimately they will take that attachment and let us become attached to Krishna. So this is a very nice example we read the other night. It's a translation by Narottam Das Thakur to Sri Rupa Goswami, Rupa Manjari. About his thoughts of his spiritual master, which are ideal. And we should try to think, is this what I'm thinking? Is this my attitude towards my guru? The lotus feet of Sri Rupa Manjari, Rupa Goswami's eternal form as a gopi of Braj, are my real wealth. They are the object of my bhajan and puja. They are the treasure of my heart, and they are my ornaments and the life of my life. They are the reservoirs of all rasa for me and the fulfillment of all my desires. They are the conclusion of the religion of the Vedas for me and are the goal of my vows, austerities, and the chanting of my mantra. They are the purpose of all my religious activities. By the power of those feet, my activities will become favorable to devotion, spiritual perfection will be achieved, and with these two eyes I shall be able actually see. The exquisite beauty of Sri Rupa Manjari's divine feet will shine like the brilliant full moon upon the lotus of my heart both day and night, thus giving relief to my afflicted soul. Such a nice attitude to have, that attraction and that attachment to your spiritual master, that all you can think of is that my whole life is just dedicated, and whatever advancement I make, wherever I go next lifetime, whatever I'm doing now, it is all because of my submissiveness to my spiritual master. So this is a very important thing that we should cultivate within our hearts every single day, really, and reflect on this. Because this Lord Chaitanya, you know, he gives us this easy process, this handicap of just chanting as the means of perfection in this age. It is also described that when Krishna was on the planet, he demanded full surrender. I guess that meant giving up everything. I'm not sure exactly what it meant, but it's definitely out of our league here in Kali Yuga. And so that's why Lord Chaitanya came and said, just chant Hare Krishna. Just get together, have a good time, chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam together. But by doing that, we become very attached to the holy name, we become attached to being initiated by the spiritual master, and from there we get purified, and from there we can make progress. So it's just going to take us a little longer, but the more we devote ourselves to the instructions of the spiritual master, the quicker it will be, and hopefully in this lifetime the spiritual master will help us to advance closer and closer and closer. And gradually our material desires will fall away, because that's the key. It's very similar, I don't know, Krishna consciousness I've been thinking lately, it's very similar to like going and doing a diet. Every once in a while I've tried to do a diet. Has anyone ever tried to go on a diet? It's hard, right? And what you do is in your mind, you're thinking, okay, we kind of make these vows. Like, okay, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to eat this, I'm not going to this. But you don't say it out loud to anybody because you don't want it recorded and it's subject to change. And like within the first day or two, you've already modified it, right? Oh, well, that's not going to work. And, well, after about three days, as far as I've ever gotten. And after 3 days, was going, just forget it, you know? Because you don't have to worry about anything except for Krishna in your heart is probably laughing like crazy, you know? But Krishna consciousness is, but if you get a partner and you say out loud, okay, let's do this, we're going to do it, we'll do it. They have that AAA thing, whatever it is, where you all call up each other, oh, I want to eat this, oh, don't do that, you know, you got your partner and all that stuff. And then you can do it. There's a whole family that all got together and did it, and they all lost like 30 pounds each, you know, and because they had that strength. And so we go on a diet, we take restrictions in Krishna consciousness, we take our vows, but we take them in front of the deities, right to our spiritual master, and we beg the help of the Vaishnavas. We have that support that's so needed to fulfill those vows. So it's like a diet, but it's made easy, and we can be successful in this lifetime if we just take to this process of becoming very devoted, and then we'll have this strength. But they do have now, it's called a Fitbit. Anybody know what a Fitbit is? Yeah, it's a little thing you put on your arm. It's a digital thing, and if you're going on like a diet, it'll tell you to record how far you've walked in a day, and it'll tell you didn't walk far enough. You're getting this many calories burned off. No, you need to do more. And so this is like a little. It doesn't work very well either. We don't have that in Krishna consciousness. We can't cheat. We don't have anyone telling us. You know, every day, you got a little thing goes off. You got to wake up now. It's Arctic time. You know, it's this that. No, it's our vows that we make that we have to stick to. And I know when I first came to Krishna consciousness, my practically the first second day is that there's a deal. They say you take one step toward Krishna, and Krishna will take 10 steps towards you. So that's what we need. That is our help, and that's it works. And we can do this together with Krishna, especially when he's helping us a lot more than we're going towards him. But still, it's not easy. You know, surrendering to Krishna is not an easy process because it's purifying, and that requires some tapasya. I hear it over and over again in Srila Prabhupada's lectures that this tapasya is required. It's necessary. It's essential to be successful You get so many benefits. But the results are wonderful. Just like if you go on a diet, you know, you actually learn to lose a lot of pounds. You feel really good. So when you really surrender to Krishna, it feels really good. And this is an expression by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's called Atmani Vedana, full surrender, full thing. He says, I have become extremely happy by surrendering myself at your lotus feet. All my miseries and anxieties have been vanquished, and everywhere I look, I see happiness. Now, having taken shelter of those lotus feet, I gave up the fear of material existence. I will render service to you in this world, but I will not accept any reward in return. I will simply engage in activities which please you while remaining attached to your lotus feet. All miseries faced in the course of your service are actually the source of great happiness. Feelings of happiness and distress in your service are a great wealth. Both destroy the miseries of ignorance. So ignorance is no fun. It's not bliss. This Atmani Nivedana is the real bliss that we're all hankering for, that we're all hoping that will come today, I'm sure. But it requires some practice, and we have the best process of doing that. So Vidura, he has made the decision to leave and to go after a different type of surrender after this struggle. And so he goes to here and he gets that association. He sets the example of searching out that association, which is will help us give that strength. But also he's going to the temples, and he's seen the deities. He's seen that this is very important. And all of our previous acharyas and Prabhupada all saw that this deity worship is essential for our progress also. We're all raised in such impersonalism. It's embarrassing. So this personalism, the Archivikrama has some kind of potency, some special potency that he puts in there, that the spiritual master calls and puts in there, that can pull you into a relationship by just standing in front of them. Some kind of relationship develops, and it binds you to the deity, which cleanses our heart and starts to create that bhakti, that reciprocation of love. And so this is much needed for us. And we see, we all have our experiences we could all share, I'm sure, of that potency. And even Lord Chaitanya, he took how many years going, walking all down, and what did he do? He went to all the temples, and he saw the deities, and he had that relationship also with all these different deities. So this is something that we should do, and take very serious the responsibility of taking care of the deities. It requires our surrender is our time. The time to come here and see the deities, and for them to come see you. They want to see who's come here. I'm sure he saw that gentleman come in. The last 2 days he's been bringing in a whole bunch of stuff, tons of stuff. And I'm sure he sees them come all the time, and he sees what he's giving. But also our time, a lot of time goes into this worship. And Prabhupada would go around the planet where he dropped off all these deities, where he took a lot of risk and bringing the deities, even expressing to the deities and said, oh gosh, I hope they take care of you. And otherwise I'm in big trouble. And so he dropped them off and he said, please, you know, take this seriously. If you think it's just a big burden, then that's a great misfortune for everyone. For me, for you, for the deities. Don't think it's a burden. See it as a privilege to come here and sit down there and take those little teeny weeny petals and fold them a million thousand times and put them on that string and offer it to Krishna. So, or whatever Govinda Mahini is doing, I don't know, she's always making beautiful anklets for the Lord, fantastic anklets. So, these things are for our benefit. And these temples should be such that they are a pilgrimage place for other people. That people can come off the street, especially if you're in like New York or Brooklyn, walking around, all those people walking around in this degraded society with just the pits, you know? And you walk in the temple doors and you go, wow, an oasis, awesome. You know, I actually was there and some people came off and said, wow, this is really a shelter. You know, they should feel it as a pilgrimage place. There's one gentleman that comes. I met him for the first time. He's been coming here. He drives 3 hours from Melbourne every Saturday just to find some service to do and see the deities. That's his pilgrimage. People come from Jacksonville. I see them at the Eco Farm, and they come just to as a pilgrimage. It's a long drive, you know. It's another, you know, an hour and a half out here, an hour and a half back. Spend the time to see the deities. But this is their pilgrimage place, and so we have to make it like that, because this is where we learn the art of giving, not of taking. I guess I'm going to expose myself by telling you a story. That I went to Vrindavan one time. It was early on in my Krishna consciousness, but you can see what a neophyte I was, thinking that I'm going to go to Vrindavan in this mood. I was going there to get ideas to make some things for the deities, and I needed some books on how to design books. I'm always looking for design books, right? I'm always looking for nice artist over here, looking for designs. And so I went into at that time, underneath the Gurukula. So that's been a long time ago. They had a place where they started making their own clothes. They invited people, they hired people to come and design all the outfits and sew them. And there was one lady in charge. And she was kind of a heavy-duty lady. And so I went in there and I noticed the man was making designs, you know. He was doing the designs and the people were sitting on the floor doing all the embroidery work. And I saw some design books in the corner. I said, "Wow, these look really nice. Is this where you get your designs?" And she said, "No, I don't know. You know, they know their designs." I said, you know, "Do you sell these books? You know, can I get these books?" And she gave me some price, and I go, "I can probably get it cheaper in the market." I came to the holy Dom trying to take from the Dom, not to give. And she actually said, "You know, people come here." She said, and I'll never forget the words. They come here wanting to take and not thinking of what they can give the holy Dom. And I took that to heart. So whenever I go to the Dom, I try to think of something that they need, you know, something that I could bring, some insignificant thing. And I could have given the money to the Dom, but no, I got to go find it cheaper somewhere else, save a few pennies, right? So this was a lesson learned. And so we should also learn that what can we give to this place? We can give our time, we can give our money. If we can't give our time, give our money. If we can't give our service, serve the devotees that are serving, something. So this is a pilgrimage place, and we should see it like that. And give what we can. It's so nice to see people come and give things in. And this is not just a spectator sport. It's not like I gave. I mean, it's nice to some, especially when a new person comes and you go, "Oh, wash the pots," and you go, "Look, they're washing the pot. They're getting their first, you know, brownie points." And look, "Oh, he's doing this." You try to sneak it. Figure out how to engage the person so they start their bank account, right? You think, "Oh, the bliss, and look how happy it is," and everything. This is for us too. We're newcomers here. It's not like we did our stuff in the beginning and now we don't do anything else now. The scoreboard is still there. We can still put points in our bank account by doing things. And in the mood of that I'm doing it for the first time. And those are the best times, right? Because you're just surrendering, just without thinking about getting paid, without thinking of someone's going to glorify me, but just doing those things. It's still there. It's our wealth, is to continue surrendering. It's an ongoing process. It doesn't mean just taking the vows, but it means keeping them and keep surrendering in whatever opportunity. Just like Vidura is now surrendering in a different way. He's maybe doing some self-help. Yes, that's surrender too. So it's a balance. You take in and you give out. Just like Prabhupada said, going to the pilgrimage. Take in and then give it to others. So that should be our attitude. I think someone said a nice thing that I caught the other day in class. that young devotee said, that do your best and let Krishna do the rest. So yes, we should do our best. Not that, Krishna, you do your best and I'll take rest. You know? Yeah, you help me. And you know, Krishna didn't let that fly with Arjuna. You know, go off and I'll do all the killing. No, you get in here and you fight. You do your part. So this is something we should take to heart, because surrendering is not easy, and we see that Vidura, he is now going to take. He tried to be the teacher, to be the guru, and it was a thankless task. And I can verify that teaching is a thankless task. But Prabhupada, we don't want him to think that we're not thanking him at every moment, because he is the greatest teacher. And our surrender now is to show him that we do care, to show him by becoming Krishna conscious. And then the last point that I noticed from this article was about being alone, that Vidura actually went alone. And there is some great fruitiveness from being alone, spiritually, sometimes, going off and going by yourself and really absorb yourself. And even on the, I think at the Japa retreats, they have one day when you chant all your 64 rounds or something, and you take a vow of silence. It's Mona Vrata the whole day, right? You don't speak one word to anybody. Because that alone, that just being alone, you just focus on the holy name. So although we're always together in Krishna consciousness is wonderful, even in front of the deities, you can be alone with the deities by being focused. And in kirtan and in bhajan, you can be alone with Krishna. Here we see Vidura with the last little part of the purport was saying that he was just able to realize Krishna alone and nothing else. So Prabhupada's arranged this deity worship and this preaching and going on pilgrimage and absorbing Krishna consciousness as a very wonderful, movement. But at the same time, it's a meditation. And we should take opportunity when we are alone with Krishna, whether it be in your japa or whether it be at kirtan or whatever, or just be by yourself sometimes. But don't be alone because you don't want people to see you doing your nonsense. That's not being alone. Some people want to live by themselves because they don't want anyone to see what they're doing on that side. And here it's very nice in Alachua, you're never alone. You go to the grocery store, right? You see devotees, what they got in their baskets, what they eating, what they doing, you go anywhere, you see what the devotees are doing. So we are alone in our vows with Prabhupada, and we should keep them. And sometimes we do change our services, like Vidura, but usually Krishna arranges it, and we see that it's usually for advancement. Here, Vidura is going to make great advancement by meeting these great souls. So we can take, follow in his footsteps, maybe save up our pennies, go on pilgrimage, and take advantage of the great personalities that reside in the holy places and see the beautiful forms of the Lord and take them within our hearts. I always give that example of Sunita, who was on her first heart attack, I visited her, and she said, I didn't make it. All I thought about was who's going to take care of my gardens. I hope that doesn't happen to me. And he said, the second heart attack, she goes, I did better. I thought of Radha Shyam in Vrindavan. She was very attached to Radha Shyam in Vrindavan. And she said, I did better. So the process works. And of course, the third time, she was chanting, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada. So these are our shelters, so we should take advantage of it. And no matter what little pain we have, like in our diet, hang on to our vows and hang on to this great privilege that we have of of doing devotional service in association with devotees. So anyone else have a comment? I do have one little verse that is on my calendar the other day about change, about the variety, how variety is a mother of enjoyment. Prabhupada said, we Vaishnavas, we want varieties. The cowherd boys, they are satisfying Krishna by going in the forest and mock fighting with him. When he comes home, Krishna is taken care of by Mother Yasoda. So variety is a mother of enjoyment. Yes, ma'am.
You mentioned about Sunita and her attachment, and also you were talking about doing service to the Dham, and I was thinking, oh, what is the service one can do for the Dham, and you go to the Dham, and I was remembering that how Sunita would, whoever was going to Vrindavan,
paint cans full of ghee, paint cans, she would say, can you just take a gallons of ghee to the deities in Vrindavan, or gallons of nuts
and cheese. And it's like if you were going, you didn't want to tell her because she was going to give.
She'd load you down. Yeah, she's always thinking of what to give.
Yeah, she's always just thinking about Sunita.
And then they appeared in front of her. They were there for her. Prabhupada said, and as far as deity worship says, the more you decorate the deities, the more Krishna will decorate you. And also, when someone gave money for a temple, and Prabhupada said, yes, you built this temple, now Krishna is building a temple for you, a house for you in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
So it's such a nice reciprocation. It really, what a better thing is there? You know?
And it's, I always think, amazing, wow, this is Vrindavan, and a place of milk and cows and ghee, but no, she knew what was actually happening in the temple. Like, take the ghee, take the cheese.
Anybody else? Okay, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.